This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. I am still in Hyderabad at CompEd conference. And today I have met the very lovely Dr. Lakshmi Ganesh. Deep breath for this bit. Tirumalamala.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's okay?
That's okay.
You're not laughing, so that's a good sign.
Yeah.
How would you say it?
I would say Lakshmi Ganesh Tirumalamala.
That sounded excellent. That's what I said.
We're just blowing bubbles. That's fine.
So where did you grow up?
Oh, that's... Thank you for the question. Yeah. So I grew up all over India, I think thanks to my parents. I come from a small village in Kerala by name Tiruvallamala. That's where my name also has its with the village. But my father found that it's a good idea to take us around India wherever he had a job, and every 2 years he moved, and I don't know why he thought it was a good idea to move us around. And so I've grown up almost all parts of India, the western, eastern, northern, south.
That would have been an amazing experience. Probably didn't seem so at the time.
Yes, it didn't, because unlike other kids when I was growing up, I didn't have the same bunch of friends. It's like, oh, this is my childhood friend, someone whom I grew up with. I didn't have that. But what I think it gave me, I feel when I, you know, we look back and we see what it gives you, it gave me a sense of adaptability. Yeah, given in any situation, I'm like thrown in the deep, I will have to swim over. I mean, it's not like I can call for help. So that is something I think it kind of instilled in me.
Was the education the same wherever you went?
No, it wasn't. Yeah. So I changed 6 boards. Or when you say board in India, it's an education system. So I moved to, let's say, from a state curriculum to a central curriculum to a more Anglo-Indian curriculum. I've gone through that as well, still having the colonial past. And then I've also moved to, let's say, something very international in terms of a Cambridge curriculum sort of thing. So I moved across, so it wasn't the same. Yeah.
I think that's, if you could do that without the disruption of having to move, I think that would be actually a good thing for people to experience that different approaches.
I've never thought about it that way. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. The different approaches towards, like, I remember the state curriculum kind of exposed me to different languages in India, because in India we have like a whole different set of languages. So I can write Tamil, Hindi, I can read Marathi, I can read a little bit of Malayalam, if you may want to say. So I think the state curriculum did expose me to languages. The central curriculum was more towards, you know, math and drill and practice. So if you ask me that, and if I think about it that way, maybe but I think the moving also has gotten this vagabond in me that, you know, I really don't like being in a place for a long time. I look for new experiences. So I do solo travels every year. I'm a mother of 2. But then I just insist on doing solo travels, because that's when the vagabond in me kind of, you know, just wakes up.
You tell them you're going.
Yes, I do. That would be a bad idea if I don't. But then I tell my daughter, and she asks me this, she's young, she's 7. She asks me, but why do you do this? Won't you miss me? But then I say, I'm a better person when I come back. She's like, oh, that makes sense, then you should go.
You need to go.
Yeah.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
I didn't have an idea until I reached the 9th grade. But I was very academically inclined. I mean, I was always a good student, getting good grades. And I wanted to always make my parents happy until the 9th grade. But in the 9th grade is when something called computers was introduced. And from then on, my love for computers started just growing exponentially. And I ended up becoming a computer engineer, which is a big deal then because... I remember when I was just about to start my undergraduate program, people would ask me, oh, why computers? You're a girl. You should be learning something like a language or something like that. But then I think, I kind of went against the grain. And I said, no, this is something I love, so I want to do this. And I ended up joining the computer engineering stream.
And did you work as a computer engineer?
Yes, I did. And I felt very proud of myself that I did. For about 7 years, I worked in on some of the good, when you say good, I mean some of the well-renowned software companies like Wipro, Teradata, Mindtree. And I was happy being there, yeah.
But that's not what you're doing now.
Yes, that's not what I'm doing now. You're right.
What happened?
Yeah, so I think for me at some point in time, I think it's a vagabond trait. I kind of step back and see, what is it that I'm doing? I mean, is it really like helping someone? Or is it like helping me see a better world? But then when I did software and I did all that, I couldn't see that happening. So then I said, okay, let me take a step back. Let me teach. And then I moved to teaching. I taught undergraduate engineering students for about 3 years. And surprisingly, when I said maybe I should teach, I just asked a couple of bunch of my friends. And they told me, you know what? That should have been your first job. We really didn't understand why did you just get into... engineering or becoming a software engineer. And I really enjoyed teaching. I think more than the thing about me teaching someone, what it really kind of helped me fill my voids just being there and just getting immersed in the learning process. And I enjoyed that.
Did you work as a teacher? You're
yes.
Working as a teacher now.
Yeah.
Did you do that initially once you've moved
yes.
to teaching?
Yeah, I did. I work as a teacher now and I'm a researcher also now, but I'm never able to let go of this teaching, even though, I'm a researcher, but still people ask me, why do you teach? I mean, in the sense like if you're researching about education, won't you just go and teach? I thought that was very simple, but people don't understand. People don't consider it to be a very cool thing to be a teacher, I guess. And in this part of the world, yes.
What's that?
Because I think the status of other jobs have kind of become larger. Like if you're a software engineer, oh cool, you're contributing to the economy. If you are like a businessman, oh cool, you're contributing to the economy. But a teacher is like someone who ends up not doing any of that, and that's the last resort. So I think teaching is more not sought after these days.
But not so much that it's putting you off doing it.
Sorry?
It's not so bad that perception isn't so bad that you're not doing it.
Yeah.
So that the benefits outweigh those negatives.
Yeah.
Let's take the first of your music choices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a go at pronouncing this one as well. Humhongi Kamalap.
Kamyab.
Kamyab.
Yeah.
Oh, so close.
Yeah, you will.
Why this one?
It translates to "we shall overcome." Because, I mean, I'm just finding that last couple of years, been so much of gloom and doom and, you know, so much of things that we as humans are doing. And I don't know, I always have this optimism towards the human intellect that, you know, I don't know, I mean, there will be something good that happens at the end of it. We shall overcome, right? So that's something that I held on to always.
Pura hai.
have seen lots of doom and gloom in the last couple of years. Have you had a deliberately positive mindset?
Yeah. I think it's important because the force of negativity is so huge that it can just pull you down, mm-hmm. right? You have to resist that and you will have to stay afloat. And this helps you do that, and you have to be deliberately positive. And I like people who are like that, you know. I really like intellect who doesn't just say that, oh, it's all going down to the dogs and this has happened. But, you know, there is that glimmer of positivity, hope, optimism.
What did you do your research on?
So I worked on understanding what difficulties do undergraduate software engineering students have when they have to create software conceptual designs. So what usually happens is that what I saw in my studies with undergraduate engineering students in India, it usually happens that their students have the problem of fixation. I don't know if it's a problem, but they get fixated to either a part of a problem or a part of a solution. Whereas an experienced or an expert sees the whole forest, right? So how do I support students to move from this fixated mindset towards seeing them, helping them see the forest? So there was already this conceptual framework by name function behavior structure, which helps you understand, okay, what is the functionality? How does this behave? What are the underlying structures towards it? So I help students to create this functional behavior structure, this idea, and then help them see the forest so that they move out from this fixation. And I believed, I created a learning environment for it. So after completing, I ran a bunch of studies and wrote a couple of papers. But what I think really is the impact is that I created a software conceptual design course on the Indian equivalent of a MOOC. It's called the SWIM platform. And I run this course with a colleague of mine, and it's been accessed by around 10,000 students in India. So I feel that rather than, you know, my PhD thesis being in a library in a couple of papers, is now become a course that is accessible to students all over India. So that gives me a sense of happiness.
Well done.
Thank you.
Do you think that there is an Indian-specific curriculum for computing? Not just that there happens to be one with, you know, India at the title, but is the content of it different from what they might learn in in San Jose or in the Midwest of America? Or
no. There is no. Even if that exists, like people might come up and say, Lakshmi, you're saying this. No, see, we have contextualized it. The word contextualization is used so much, right? But I think we pay lip service only to contextualization. We are looking at only the form. Okay, when I go back to CS, form, like maybe a pizza can get converted to a roti. Or idli, which is a Indian, delicacy, breakfast item, right? But the function of it hasn't really, like, being contextualized. So that, I have a feeling that there is no Indian. But how much of papers do we read about how do Indian students approach programming? What are the difficulties do they have? Not many, because we still are trying to put a Western lens towards how are students learning, how are students doing certain things, right? So, yeah.
If you had a magic wand to fix that problem, what would you do?
So when you say magic wand, it's like whatever I want.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be magic. It can be a large amount of money to pay for it.
Thank you. Yeah, so I would want to set up a center which does specifically this instead of, you know, just these things that I say, like, how are they learning? What are they doing? I want to set up a center and just not worry about we creating publishing papers, but we creating ground level impact, because I'm very, very conscious of the word, choice of words that I'm using. Because when I say ground level impact, turning them into actionables, right? I think I would do something like that.
And what would you be hoping would be the outcome?
The outcome would be, let's say, in Hyderabad, a bunch of kids learning computing differently than in Tamil Nadu, in Chennai, or let's say in Coimbatore, or let's say even in Thiruvallamalai, kids learning differently. Because it really like goes to why are they learning computing for, right? Are they learning to computing to not for, let's say, the curricula set, you have to learn DevOps, you have to learn the React script, you have to learn Node.js. No. I'm learning computing. I'm using computing as a tool to solve a problem of mine, or to solve a problem of my neighbor, or to problem solve of my community. Right? So the problems may change. So in Hyderabad, you might be learning computing navigating the smart city, but in Thiruvallamalai, you might be learning computing to understand what's the groundwater composition like. So, yeah, that would be something. And also, build a theory of learning in computing specific to India. And this has been something that I've been telling to everyone since my PhD. But, yeah, I haven't done much. Also, it's been just 3 years since I graduated. So, yeah, because since you said I have a magic wand, maybe I could do this.
Well, that is one that is worthy of my follow-up question. In fact, the first one was, well, follow-up question is, what's the smallest thing that you could do to make the biggest impact in the direction of that magic?
There's a thing that I'm currently doing.
Yeah?
Yeah, which I think, you know, to just look back at it, I feel proud.
Yeah.
That what I'm currently doing. I currently work for a not-for-profit school, which works with resource-constrained students. I teach computer science in the school, and I'm also building the computer science curriculum for the school. So these are a bunch of kids who are extremely gifted but do not have resources. When I say resources, these are financial resources, parental guidance, as well as, you know, space in the community. So we're talking about urban poverty, right? So these are the kids who stay in Mumbai, who see what can affluence bring, because Mumbai is the financial capital and it has like the top, it has at least I think two people from the top 10 richest people in the world. It has at least I think two people here in Mumbai. So they see what affluence can bring, but they do not have access to it. And these are youngsters. So I work with such kids, and and I'm teaching computer science and I'm building the curriculum there.
Well, how do the gifted kids get found?
So we run camps. We run camps in communities to really pick the gifted kids, and we bring them to our school, and yeah, that's how it works.
So what sort of things do you have them doing?
So we get them to learn arts, we get them to learn computing, we get them to learn science. So the school is basically a practice-oriented school. So they learn science as if they were scientists, they learn computers as they are computer engineers or data scientists. Yeah. So they are asked to take the role. And they learn mathematics as if they are mathematicians. So it's very practice-oriented school in Mumbai. It's called Shikha Academy, which is in Borivali, Mumbai.
That's an interesting approach to that. It's not that you're a kid learning maths or whatever it might be, but actually embodying the persona, the professional practice of a mathematician. It's kind of putting them in a position where it's making that very strong. It's not just this aspirational,
yeah,
oh, maybe I could be an astronaut. But you're actually like starting to behave like that.
Yeah.
That's a really powerful thing to do.
Yeah, I can give you an example of how it happens in the class, right? So I believe this is a computer science class. And I tell them that a zoo in India has approached you. Let's say zoo is maybe not a great example, but I would say like a natural sanctuary in India has approached you to create an app for them. Which means that the kids who are coming into the sanctuary will actually use this app. And this app, once they scan for an animal, it gives them some information about the animal. So the kids become here the computer, the designer of the app, the logic behind the app. So they kind of become the software engineer. And they design it based on it. And that happens across the curriculum. In science, you're a scientist. In mathematics, you're a mathematician.
Talking about nature sanctuaries, here's Tahu.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tahua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day who you are. A triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very challenging. And it's so important that we practice kindness, compassion, loving actions, loving words, loving non-verbal behavior, everything. And we remember that everybody in the whole world is in a state of recovery and recalibration at the moment. The world that we knew so well has changed. And this is something that we're all still processing. And we really deserve all the love, all the care, all the time, all the support that we can innately provide, in my opinion. And of course, for me, you know, I love the living world, I love nature, I love being outside, I love just the beauty, the intense, intense beauty that I see all around me in the living world. And it really restores and renews me. And I'm just so lucky to work at Orokinui Eco Sanctuary. It's, for me, the most beautiful paradise in the world. And, you know, when I left Aotearoa, New Zealand, when I was 7, and went over to LA and then Scotland and then England, it was a big shock for me, you know, that not everybody had that nature access and not everybody had that nature connection. And I know for all of us, we feel at times, you know, we feel alone and we feel different from other people and we feel that there may not be people around us that we connect with as we would like to. And I think for all of us at this time of year, when we are coming together and we are celebrating, so useful if we can reframe those differences as different ways of understanding how we as a species, how we as a life form experience the world. And it can be a little bit of anthropology 401, you know, it can be really actually reframed to be quite fascinating and quite stimulating for our intellects. And I know that as a species, obviously, for hundreds of thousands of years, we have come together and we have celebrated together in lots of different ways. We've created beautiful artwork, beautiful cave paintings. You know, we've journeyed deep into the earth in these incredible caves. And, you know, some people think asphyxiation played part of it, that, you know, there was low oxygen in these caves and people would get into these, you know, very transcendental states. I don't know about that, but I think that within us there's always that capacity to transcend and to celebrate together, and that's who we are as a species. You know, we're so multi-talented. And so I think that, you know, I really appreciate this long legacy, this long history which we have for communal celebration. And also within that sense of oneness and that sense of continuity of life, that we're all expressing different facets of one shared experience, there is the opportunity to feel a great sense of pride, to feel a great sense of accomplishment, to feel a great sense of gratitude, to feel a great sense of respect for all of those around us, because they are living a unique experience. We're all experiencing reality differently. Our brains all myelinize and develop uniquely. So do every cell in our body, I'm sure. And so if we can allow ourselves to accept the differences that are there, enjoy them as a bit of an anthropological expedition, and celebrate those commonalities that allow us to connect and feel safe together, I just think this season, this festive season, is going to be so beautiful. So I'm wishing you all the best times and loving being part of the show. Huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team, and I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. Lakshmi, we were talking about the urban poor, the urban poverty, the resource-constrained students, and engaging them in the possibilities that things like computer science can bring. Can that scale? How do you get from one school to all of the urban poor?
Yeah, I think you have touched upon the dilemma that I keep having.
Sorry.
Yeah, you've touched upon it. So I've been toying with this thought that, you know, scale maybe is looked at as something top down, right? Like there is something that is a model, let's kind of implement it at scale. But why can't scale be decentralized? Right? I mean, I have Lakshmi in Mumbai doing it. There could be Professor Samuel in somewhere in Hyderabad doing it. Right? So why can't we look at scale? I've been toying with this. I do not have an answer how. But this is my thought.
Because that's what takes it from the admittedly very powerful, very good thing that you're doing as like an individual to a system change.
Yeah, yeah. And it also goes down, it says that one size fits all, right? And that's not the way, I mean, education should work. I'm making this very strong statement, right? So why? Yeah.
We had somebody give a speech this morning, whose name escapes me, Dr. Jerry, mm-hmm. from the government, mm-hmm. talking about, what was his line? His line was developing a culture based on our civilization, mm-hmm. to lead the world, mm-hmm. or something, mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. To what extent are the the children that you're teaching,
mm-hmm.
do they feel part of that?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose what I'm getting at is that extreme wealth that mm-hmm. some people have and this extreme poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a halfway house or something? You know, do those kids aspire to being billionaires?
Mm-hmm.
Or do they aspire to having whatever the sensible level is?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know what, maybe you know, I over kind of, you know, see it in a rose tinted glasses, but then I see that they're very happy doing it for the community, which I feel very happy when I work with these kids. They do not aspire to become, you know, those ultra rich people. They said, okay, I have reached to a level, and they just look back and say, why can't I do it for the next person who is just sitting in my neighborhood, who's unable to join Shikha Academy because he isn't as gifted. So I want to tell you about what these couple of kids are doing. They're in the 10th grade. They are setting up, they have put up a business proposal to set up centers for life skills training for kids who couldn't get into Shikha Academy.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of, I think as adults, somewhere it happens to us, we just think, oh, those kids, they wouldn't really do this. But I think we just underestimate.
How might we help them not lose that idealism?
Mm.
Through the increasingly selfish teens and early 20s, because everyone becomes more and more self-centered through that process, because we want those kids to carry on having enough skills so that they can do that really, really well
mm-hmm.
when they have the agency and position to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
Can we see it as that as a longer term goal?
Yeah, I think I have no answer to this. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
I was backtracking on what I thought, because maybe I was discounting the impact that they can have as 10 and 11 year olds.
Yeah.
Or however old they are, you know, why do they have to wait until they're, you know, graduate level people
yeah.
in their mid-20s to start doing stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe they can change the world
yeah.
when they're young teenagers.
And change the world need not be like, you know, the scale that we think about, right? It can be just being community leaders. Yeah? So that's what they are doing. They are becoming those community leaders, and they are becoming the aspirational models for the next set of kids, next generation of kids. So
yes, maybe we need to recognize that we do need that leadership, people doing things at a community level, and that is probably more important
yeah.
than people doing it at the thing. Maybe the sweet spot, maybe the magic wand for you is doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I don't know if that's magic wand, but yeah.
But it could be if you weren't doing it. If you weren't doing it, and you were thinking, I'd really like to go and like actually help make a difference in an education situation in Mumbai with these resource-constrained families, you would say, yeah, I'll take that. So now you're doing it. I think somebody must have waved a magic wand.
Mm.
Well done.
Thank you.
What's next?
I look forward to my next solo travel. That's next. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't have, grand plans next 5 years here. see where it goes.
Okay, I'll tell you what's next. We are having Tamdina Satmira.
Handi, yeah.
You, at least you recognise what it was.
Yes,
so
yes.
That's a good sign. Yeah. Why this one?
It's such a segue. I mean, I don't know if it's serendipity. It just says, Tamdina Satmira is like, just give me a lending hand. Yeah, you know? Yeah, so I want kind of people come into Shikha and see what we are doing and maybe, you know, take back and probably emulate in their places, right? So, Tumdena Sath Mera means give me a lending hand, let's join hands.
जब कोई वाद बिगड़ जाए जब कोई मुश्किल पड़ जाए तुम देना साथ मेरा वो हम नवा न कोई है न कोई था जिंदगी में तुम्हारे सिवा
trained as a researcher and
yeah.
working in this in this school. If you put a research hat on it, what are the big questions? What's the big unknowns in that space?
The big unknowns are how to tell it works and theorize it, which I really like, you know, people like you doing it. Today, the keynote for me, the biggest takeaway, I wasn't blown away by your theories, let me be very frank, because a lot of comes from learning sciences, you know, professional practice. But I like the way how you theorize it and you say. Like, I think for me, that's a big question. And to also say that it works, right? That those are my two big questions. And that's why I put the research lens on.
I have some questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Graduating is success?
It's a big success.
Okay, so I graduated in 2021. Okay, I want to also give a context to it, because 2015 I joined the PhD program, and I was carrying my second child. So through my PhD, I've had a baby and also given birth to my dissertation, literally. So two babies, 6 years. Yeah.
And COVID.
And COVID, yeah.
Yeah. Just throw some more challenges in, shall we?
Yeah. No. You know what? I don't want challenges. I just get... why can't life be easy for women? Yeah? Just because we can handle challenges, does it mean that challenges should be thrown on us? Please make it life... Yeah, that's my appeal. The world is listening. Make life easy for women.
So we are writing a book of these conversations. It's called Tomorrow's Heroes. It's our team of people doing good work. So you're in that team. What's your superpower?
Execution is my superpower. Getting things done.
You mean getting things done, not killing people? Yeah?
Yeah.
Getting the right things done.
Right, it's a perspective, right? So I won't want to say right, because it's like 360 degree, right? I mean, I'm using the word right again and again. It's 360 degree. From this angle, it could seem right. There's a possibility that someone can seem wrong. So, yeah. Getting things done is my superpower.
How do you know? How do you know which is the side to look at things to see them as right? Just isn't the same as right, but...
Yeah, just isn't the same as right. I always ask this question. Will my action cause any harm? If it doesn't, I'm okay with it. If it doesn't cause harm, I'm okay with it. So it necessarily may not be good, but shouldn't cause harm. Yeah, so I can live with it. I always ask this question.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
It's a too strong word.
You're teaching computer science in a situation where it must be laden with goals of social justice.
Mm.
And it's purpose-driven.
Mm.
Is that... That's a deliberate choice that you've made to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're trying to change the system to... work out how to make it so it's not just you.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to work with the system, right? And help it navigate in the directions that is favorable for people in the system and creates impact. I think I don't want to change the system, but it's important to be in the system, which is why I did not want to take up an academic job, because at the end of the day, academicians are going to be cross at me, but just create models, right? So I wanted to be in the system, on the field, feet on the ground, and then navigate the system so that it creates the impact. It's like, you know, those making those small changes in the flow, so that when the flow of the stream, it reaches the right people who are waiting on the banks to have water. Yeah? And it's created that impact because it's reaching the people who are wanting water.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I think doing motivates me, like doing it, like executing it, seeing it happen, just gives me that energy to do more. It's like the feedback loop.
You said you don't want, we should be making life easier for people, women in particular.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask this question anyway. What's the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Opportunity that I look forward to is to speak to many people, right? And I don't know if I'm looking forward to anything, very frankly. There's nothing that I'm looking forward to. I'm happy.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Be good, do good.
That's nice and easy.
Yeah.
And it came out pretty quick. That's a well thought through one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. I have a question for you.
Okay.
We spoke maybe for 5 minutes. What? And you didn't know that these conversations are going to come, right? So what was it that made you say that, okay, let me talk to Lakshmi?
I have got a pretty good eye and ear for people with interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you described, almost as if it was just, yeah, working in this school, working with poor kids in Mumbai, as if that was a totally normal thing to do. I thought, there's a story in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I want to find out more about what's behind there, what's behind that, and what drives you and things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a pretty good eye. Yeah, thank you.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.